And with me, as always, is Riley.
Hello.
How you doing, Riley?
Pretty good. It's a long weekend here, so I'm very happy about that.
Me too. It's gonna just be the two of us this week. We don't have any particular topic. We're gonna just talk about what we've been up to, and then we got a number of listener questions, so we will tackle that for our second segment. Mm-hmm. Riley, what have you been up to?
Kind of the same as usual. More Overwatch. And because the season is ending soon, I decided that this weekend I'm going to finally do my placement matches. Historically, that's always gone pretty well for me. I've done it near the end of the season anyway, so we'll see. I don't know. I'm worried about doing it on a long weekend, but I want the spray to prove that I did it, so.
Right.
Yeah. Plus, please. It helps me get over my, hesitation to do ranked stuff in games with, actual people.
Yeah.
If I just go and do them all at once and knock them all out. So, I'll do that this weekend.
Well, good luck. Thanks. I've played over 400 competitive matches this season.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. I just realized how many it was today. I was like, yeah, 200 wins. And then I was like, oh, that means a lot of games.
They're not talking about the other games.
No. Yeah. There's more wins than losses.
Good, good.
But still, it's over 400 with the losses and the ties and everything.
Oh, man, that is a lot of games.
Yep.
And then, aside from Overwatch, Heroes of the Storm added a new, Valentine's Day type skin for Tyrande.
Oh.
And she's, I don't know, love goddess Tyrande or something like that. And her bow is, shaped like a heart. She's got, the little heart that floats behind her.
Oh.
And the bundle came with a heart-shaped mount, a disc mount that she can fly on, so I bought that. And her, all of her abilities are kind of, themed to match the skin. So, the owl is pink and it's got little hearts that flutter behind it. And when it hits somebody, it makes a kiss noise.
Oh.
So I've, hit a bunch of people. It's just been, kissy, kiss, kiss, kiss.
I will kiss you to death.
That's right. And her stun makes the wolf whistle noise. So you stun somebody and it does the wolf whistle. It's so good. The skin is just so good. And then one of the ultimates, the Shadow Stalk, where it stealths you and heals you at the same time. It's it's got the pink color and then hearts and stuff that come off you. But it's so good. It's definitely worth I think I paid, I don't know, $14 for the bundle because it comes with her, just the hero itself and then the skin and the mount that comes with it. So the amount of detail that goes into the more, I guess they're not they're legendary or epic or something. But that's definitely worth the money, especially with those little sound cues and stuff. I love them.
That's cool. Did anyone else get a Valentine skin?
I don't think so. I think it was just her this time around. And I'm trying to remember if there was one last year. I have no idea. So as far as I know, it was just her. But I could be wrong. But I haven't played, I've literally only played her for the last, 2 days. And then there's, this cross-promotion between Heroes of the Storm and World of Warcraft right now, where if you play 15 games with a friend, on your Battle.net list, and then you get a mount in WoW and a mount in HOTS and a stim pack in HOTS, I think. And so we were playing them, and I was just doing my regular quests that you get in Heroes of the Storm to play 8 games or play 2 games as a support or whatever. And we're going along, and I'm I don't know why I'm not getting any credit for playing games with my friends. This is weird. And My boyfriend looked over at me and he's like, "Are you playing a Warcraft hero?" And I was like, "No."
Oh.
So I had to like swap and then play something else. I was playing like Tassadar or something. I wasn't even thinking about it. And he was like, "Hey, you gotta play a Warcraft hero." And I was like, "Oh shit." So yeah, that's why I've been playing Teron so much. But the skin is so good.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It was really. I don't know. It's nice getting back into HOTS. I'm not a super big like MOBA player, but I really like Heroes of the Storm, so I don't know, maybe that's just because I'm more familiar with the characters or something, but yeah, so it's been good to get back into playing that. And then aside from games, because those are the only two that I've been playing, I watched Girl on the Train. Have you seen that?
I've read the book. I haven't seen the movie.
Okay. I mean, I assume it's the same. There's not really... I don't know how you could change it.
Mm-hmm.
That was like... I don't know. Okay, so if you haven't seen it, I'm going to spoil it. I wasn't expecting... such a clear example of somebody being gaslit.
Oh.
And having, like, you know, because it's just from, like, the things that you see from her, like, the main character. Like, mm-hmm. she, like, it does seem like she's kind of out of it, and, her character is an alcoholic, so you're kind of like, well, maybe she's having all these problems because she's been drinking so much, and then it turns out like she was manipulated into thinking she did all these horrible things by her shitbag of a husband when she was drinking a bit, and so she like forgot that she didn't do any of these things. And I was just like mm-hmm. sitting there the whole time and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah,
man, it was so good though. Like, that was a good movie. And I have the book in my car right now. So I'm planning on reading that at some point. I don't know, like, I'm interested in seeing the difference between the book and the movie, because like the way that they showed the flashbacks and stuff in the movie was really like seeing the movie, there was no, like, there wasn't any doubt in my mind that she like was a violent alcoholic. And then I'm wondering, like, if the book would change that, like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time remembering exactly how that was covered in the book.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to read. It's like a short little book too, so.
Yeah.
So I'll have to look at that. But yeah, it was really good. And then I watched Deepwater Horizon. Which is like all about the oil rig that blew up in the Gulf of Mexico in 2006. Is that right? I'm
not sure.
That was really interesting. I work in the environmental field here in Ontario, so like seeing the drill crew go through all of their safety checks and then wondering why their like parent company didn't do some of these other tests and stuff, which ended up leading to the drill rig, not the rig itself, but like the, I can't remember what it's called, but the thing that holds the well in the water, like at the bottom of the ocean, basically. Mm-hmm. Whatever holds it there, like there was some compromise in the cement seal that they did, and they didn't test that before the new crew came on and had to like seal the well or something. So then all of this shit happened because they didn't do like a preventative maintenance check. Like, it just reminds me like that, you know, even though you think like safety procedures and stuff are like annoying and like a waste of your time, obviously they're not, because huge disasters can happen.
Yeah, especially when it's something like that. Like,
yeah.
They can have such an impact.
Like, huge companies like BP trying to cut corners and save money when, you know, they're like a, I don't know, however many billions of dollars worth. Like, and then the people that suffer are, like, first, like, the workers. I think they had 11 people that died on the rig itself, and then everybody got out. But then, like, the people that survived have, like, PTSD. And then, like, the ocean and all of the oil that went in the Gulf of Mexico, and then all the people that live, like, nearby. Like, it's just the scope of that disaster is gigantic, and it could have been prevented by them just doing the stupid cement seal test. Like, fuck. It was so, like, oh, I wanted to, like, punch those dudes. Anyway.
Was the movie good?
Yeah, I really liked it. It kind of, like, it went by really quickly, which I guess is kind of representative how fast something like a drill rig can blow up, basically. But it was really good. And the special effects on it, like, I don't know how they did the fire on the rig. Like, the whole, like, rig tower was basically, like, an inferno of flames and smoke. And I don't know how they did that. But the special effects were, like, incredible.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really good. And I think it was on, like, I bought it off of, or I rented it on iTunes or something. So, yeah. Anyway, that was a good one. And then I started watching Voltron. And I've never seen the original one. So, I don't know. I think it's cool, but the way that Voltron, like, fits together is so goofy with the cats. Like, the mechanical cats, like, turn into his arms and his legs. And, like, I don't know. I just, that part to me is really goofy, but otherwise, I like it. I'm only, like, 4 or 5 episodes in. But so far, it's been pretty good.
I know of Voltron from, like, when I was a kid, but is there a story, or is it basically just, like, Transformers with cat things?
It seems like there's a story. Like, there's aliens that are taking over the universe, and the Voltron paladins are the only ones that can stop them with Voltron, I guess. So they have to, like, work together to do it, to form Voltron. I mean, it's good. And the episodes are really short. They're, like, I don't know, 23 minutes or something. So,
nice.
It's, like, good to watch when you've got some extra time and you don't have time to sit down and watch, like, an hour show. And then, of course, in my K-pop corner this week, the band that I've been following, BTS, they put out a repackage of their album that they put out last year. So they added 4 new songs. And last week, the music video came out for one of them. And it's really good. I haven't been able to stop watching it. And I mean, like, their new stuff is good. It's different enough that it's, that it doesn't sound like all of their old songs. There's one of them that I get confused, and I think that it sounds like the chorus part especially sounds like some of their old stuff, which I guess, you know, could probably happen when they've got like a big company behind them that's like, well, you should put out a song that sounds like this, and they're like, okay. But yeah, their new stuff is really good, and they have, like, it's concert season for them, so it's like there's fan cameras and stuff of their concerts that are coming out now, and I'm just like,
Still no Toronto dates.
No. I don't understand. Like, maybe, like, it's just not a big enough fan group out here? I have no idea, but, like, I think the proximity to the States would make it easier, but I don't know.
Yeah. Not even, like, I don't know, Detroit or something? That's fairly close. No.
There's Chicago and that's far. Newark. And then Anaheim.
Oh.
So, yeah. I don't know. Like, there's a huge, K-pop fan group that's in Montreal. There's, like, tons of fans here in Toronto, so I'm not sure, like, when they'll come here. There's another group that's coming here at the end of March, so, I mean, there's a fan base for it, but mm-hmm. I don't know. They just announced a date for, like, Sydney, Australia, so, I mean, come on. Anyway, that's what I've been up to this week. What about you, Pam?
I've mostly been playing things that I've already talked about a lot. Overwatch, XCOM 2. I just finished my playthrough on Xbox. I had an all-lady squad that was made up out of all the ladies in our coven, plus a few other people. I made a character for Dia Lucina, who's been on the show, and I made one for Frida Wolf, since she is one of the voices in the game. And cool. We kicked the aliens' asses yesterday. I finished my playthrough.
Yes.
I've been watching a bunch of things. I watched the Santa Clarita Diet, which is one of the new Netflix originals. And it's weird and silly and gross. Like, it's basically Drew Barrymore is the main character in it, and she dies but then comes back to life as a zombie, but not the typical sort of mindless zombie, just one that's sort of ruled by their compulsions and needs to eat human flesh. So it becomes sort of like this family thing. So her husband knows about it and her daughter knows about it, and they try to find a way of killing people, but only bad people, so that the mother can eat. But it's like a combo of Desperate Housewives and Dexter, sort of. Like, it's very suburban, and I don't know. I think it was very silly, as I said, but Drew Barrymore and Timothy Olyphant are the leads, and they both did a really good job. Like, the performances were really good, but I found the entire thing just very bizarre. I also watched season 3 of The Fall, which is a British TV show about a police investigator played by Gillian Anderson who's tracking down a serial killer who kills women. And I really liked the first two seasons of that show. There was, like, this really good cat and mouse kind of game, and it sort of went between focusing on the killer and focusing on the police investigator, whose name is Stella. And Stella was always sort of calling out sexist bullshit in, like, the police department or with what the serial killer was doing. But then season 3 sort of takes all that good stuff and drops it. I guess spoilers for season 2, but, like, the serial killer, Paul, he gets caught, but on his way to police custody, he gets shot. So season 3 starts out, and they go the amnesia route, where he's like, I don't remember killing all these women, and that's just not good. Like, that's a very, very bad plot point. And
yeah, so this seems like lazy writing.
It does seem like lazy writing. Like, amnesia's not, like, I can think of, like, Memento. That was a movie that used amnesia well. But otherwise, like, it just seemed like a way to keep it going for an entire season when it probably didn't need to. So, yeah, it focused mostly on Paul and not on Stella. And then there wasn't anything, I don't know, nothing super interesting happened until the last episode. So it kind of felt like the first 5 episodes or however many there were a bit of a waste of time.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then I watched another Netflix original. This one's a movie called Girlfriend's Day, and it stars Bob Odenkirk, who's from He saw in Breaking Bad, and he was in Mr. Show. And I think he wrote it as well. And it is also kind of bizarre. It's like a dark comedy noir movie, but it's got this very oddly specific concept to the world, and that is that greeting cards are super popular and greeting card writers are like celebrities.
Huh. Okay.
Which is, yeah, which is like such a specific thing to build your world around. So he is a he's a greeting card writer, and he has writer's block, and he ends up getting fired from his job. And then the mayor or the governor or someone announces a new holiday called Girlfriend's Day, and there's a contest to make the best greeting card for Girlfriend's Day. And then it gets weird. Like, there starts being, like, intrigue and murder about who's going to write this card, and, like, the big card companies each want someone to write the card, and they're, like, trying to steal from each other, and it's Whoa. Very strange. It's, like, I liked it. It was only 70 minutes long, so it was really short, and it was really well done and well written, and there was a couple supporting characters who really gave it that sort of noir feeling. Like, Natasha Lyonne was the wife of another card writer, and then Henry Summer, who was from Firewatch.
Mm.
Yeah. He was another character that was like Bob Odenkirk's friend, and they did a really good job. So if you're into sort of bizarre kind of dark comedies, I definitely give Girlfriend's Day give that a shot.
Hmm. Cool.
And then as for books, I've been into short stories lately. So I finished one collection. It's called Those Who Make Us, and it's a Canadian collection of short stories about monsters. So that was really good. My favorite story in there was about unicorns. And the other one I'm reading right now that I'm in the middle of is called Cyberworld, Tales of Humanity's Tomorrow. And that's all sort of like cyberpunk kind of stories. And they're good. I really like short stories because I find my attention span isn't that long for books anymore, or really anything.
Yeah.
But it's nice because, like, on the way home or on the way to work on the subway, I can just, like, read one little short story and be done with it. So I'm finding that what really makes the difference for whether I enjoy them or not is whether it feels like it's complete. Like, I find a lot of short stories do, like, this really good job of a setup, but then it just sort of ends, whereas the ones that I really like feel like a complete story that is just short.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like, you know, if you're writing a short story, it doesn't have to be a prelude into something that could come later.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want it to be nice and little and compact.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I listened to another podcast series called Alice Isn't Dead. And it's by the creators of Welcome to Night Vale, which I know is a pretty popular podcast. Mm. And it's about a woman who is a long-distance trucker. And she is sort of talking to her wife, who she thought was dead, but realizes sort of before
the Alice things, isn't dead.
Alice isn't dead. Spoiler, yeah. Yeah, she's not dead. So the whole thing is done. It's sort of like an episode-by-episode thing where she goes to some town and strange things happen. Ooh. And all the way through, there's this serial killer called the Thistle Man, who she sort of has run-ins with, or she sort of like sees what he's been doing sort of all across the route that she's taking.
Hmm.
And it's really good. The narration is all done by one person whose name is Jessica Nicole, and she does an amazing job. Like, she does a really, really good job narrating. And even though she's the only person who ever speaks in it, it's very engaging.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's it for what I've been doing. So, we have a number of listener questions.
There's a lot of them.
There are. Yes, thank you everyone who sent them in. Do you want to start off with one?
Sure. So the first one... okay, so the first couple are from Orc Chop, so when there's a new person, we'll let you know. So the first one is, what do you think of Mass Effect Andromeda having a conversation style that's not Paragon and Renegade? I think that it's good that they're kind of stepping away from the Paragon Renegade scale. Like, first, because I so strongly associate that with Commander Shepard.
Hmm.
I think the idea of having, like, so from what I understand, the way that the conversations are going to work is probably a little closer to Inquisition's dialogue wheel, where you have the option to answer in a different way depending on the tone of voice you want to take. So, like, mm-hmm. if you want to give a sarcastic answer, you can. If you want to be serious, you can. Like, that kind of deal. So there isn't really, like, a good or bad way to take the conversation. It's more like however you feel like your character would genuinely react. You have the option to pick that.
And yeah.
As far as I read, I think that's right.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea as well. Like, I agree with you that the Paragon Renegade is definitely very connected to Shepard in my mind. So, I mean, I really liked the way that Dragon Age, both Dragon Age 2 and Inquisition, did responses, where it's more like forming your character's personality versus I mean, I know Paragon Renegade wasn't strictly good versus bad, but like pragmatic versus like more empathetic, I guess. So I like that it'll probably give a little more sort of options for responses. So I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
So our next question is, who is your Overwatch Valentine?
I did the Twitter one, and the Twitter one gave me Reaper.
Oh, the Twitter one gave me Tracer.
Aw, I wish I got Tracer. Although I've been playing a lot more Symmetra lately, so I don't know. She'd be pretty good.
Yeah, I wish I got May. So.
Oh.
But yeah. Wasn't there supposed to be? I was sure that there was like data mining or something that showed Valentine's Day voice lines in Overwatch. But then there was no event because I guess the Chinese New Year was...
It was late this year or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Hmm. Maybe next year, I guess.
I guess so.
Just have to wait for official Valentine's Day stuff.
Yep.
The third and final question from OrcChop is, are you going to play through any of the Mass Effect games while waiting for Andromeda?
I am not. I have too much else to play.
The answer in my heart is yes, of course I will. But the practical side of me says, what the hell are you thinking? You don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Renegade playthrough on Mass Effect 2 that is like right in the middle of the game. So I could finish it, but then like I just don't have time. And then to try and like play through Mass Effect 3 again, like that's a long game. On its own, so I don't think I can. Plus, I don't think I can take like the emotional buildup of playing the series again before playing Andromeda. Like, I don't need that stress in my life.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's sort of like its own story and everything. Sort of getting all involved in that original trilogy again might be a little much.
I'm too stressed out waiting for Andromeda to begin with. So, yeah. No, I won't be. And it doesn't sound like Pam will either, so. No.
So, the next question comes from Cartridge Brothers, or Cartridge Bros, P1. What advice would you give to a new content creator just starting out in the podcast or video world?
Hmm. I would say, because, so I let this kind of affect starting anything myself, was not having the equipment that I thought I should have. So I kind of got hung up on, I should have this kind of mic, I should have this webcam, I should make sure that, like, my computer has this much RAM, and, like, I was getting caught up in that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to start a podcast is so easy to start, and you definitely do not need, you know, the big name microphones like a Blue Yeti or even the Snowball. Like, you don't need one.
Mm-hmm.
There are cheaper ones that you can start out with. So don't get it in your head like I did that you need all that stuff to start. Just start doing it. And that's the main thing, is to just do it. Mm-hmm. See if you like it. And then, you know, if you find that you've got a passion for it, then keep going and promote it and stick to a schedule. For podcasts especially, I find that a release schedule is really important. And sticking to that schedule and making sure that you are coming out with content consistently and, you know, on the same date, so that once you start building up a listener base, you know, they're not going, well, where's the podcast this week? And you can say to them, you know, or you don't have to worry about, you know, giving them an excuse that I didn't have time or whatever, because you've already, you know, you've built up to that point where you're ready to go on this, you know, consistent schedule, and you can keep it that way. And, you know, mm-hmm. you're not letting your listeners down.
Yeah.
I can't speak about video stuff, though.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I think the most important thing is that, like, if you're thinking about doing a podcast or a video, like, yeah, just do it. Before we started this podcast, I had been sort of like humming and hawing and being like, oh, I really want to start a podcast, and thinking about it and tweeting about it for like months.
Yep.
And then one day, I think you sent me a text about something completely unrelated, and I was just like, all right, pull the trigger. I was like, hey, I have something to, you know, ask you. I'll send you an email tomorrow. And then it's like, okay, now I'm on the hook and I have to, like, ask someone else. And then I think also doing that, having, like, a second person doing it, means you have to sort of be accountable to someone else who's not just yourself. So, mm-hmm. yeah, just do it if it's something that you think you want to do. Again, you don't need the best stuff. If it is something you find that you really like and really enjoy doing, it'll get better with practice and with effort. I mean, with my videos, I look back to the videos I made 2 years ago and it's like, oh, wow, my sound is terrible and my lighting is terrible and you can see me reading the script off camera and it's so bad. But, you know, it gets better. So just get in there, start doing it. I liked the point about having a consistent schedule. That's pretty good, especially for podcasts, I think. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of videos, I don't know if you have any specific video advice. Sort of make what you like for videos. I think a lot of people get caught up in what they think is going to get views or what they think their people want to see. But like, I'll do that occasionally. Like, if I do a game room tour, that's not a thing I'm particularly interested in. And I know other people are, and that I do that pretty much strictly for what other people think, but I make sure that most of the content I do is just stuff that I'm interested in doing and saying and putting together. So
yeah, that's like, I think the same could be applied if you're looking at doing, like, starting up a streaming kind of thing too, is to stream what you want to be playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because your audience will be able to tell that you're not having a good time. So
yeah.
Yeah, definitely, you know, pursue something that you want to be doing. And if you start it and you find that you don't like it, that's okay. Now you know. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You don't have to be doing a podcast. You don't have to have a YouTube channel. Like, they seem like big things that are going on right now. You know, like, there's so many podcasts and tons of YouTubers and vloggers, and like they're everywhere. But mm-hmm. if you don't like doing it, that's okay. You don't have to do it. Like, you can find something else and put your energy into that instead of thinking that you should be doing it. And if you're starting it with the goal of becoming popular, you're doing it for the wrong reason to start with. You've got to do it because you like doing it. So that's my big advice. Do it because you love it.
Good advice.
Thanks. Okay. Next question. So the Doc Web asks, have either of you played Stardew Valley? And why can't I stop playing it? You have poor impulse control.
Yeah. It's specifically designed to be addicting.
That's right.
I haven't played it myself, so.
Yeah, I played it briefly. I think it's still installed. I love the idea of it. It's really cute, and you can like make your own farm, and you can like upgrade your farm, and there's even romances and stuff. But I don't know, I just couldn't like get into it the way that I know other people have gotten into it. Yeah, let's see. I started playing Stardew Valley, and then I got to the point where I had to set up my farm, and I did that, and then I harvested some stuff, and then I sold some stuff, and I was like, I'm good. And I know there's way more to the game because I've watched like Let's Plays and Twitch streams of it. Like I've seen pretty much all of the game without having played it myself, and like it's cute and like I appreciate it for what it is, but it's not for me.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Those sort of like kind of like sim but sort of like everyday life kind of sim games aren't for me, because I just like, I'm like, I have to water plants and things. Like, this just feels like doing chores. I should just go clean my kitchen.
Should go clean my kitchen. I mean, like, I was really interested in the romance system, and I guess now they've added like you can romance more than one person now. Like, there's a polyamory option. And they've added, I feel like it's always getting updated. I don't know exactly like what kinds of stuff. The romance one specifically I know of, but that's it. So I don't know. You just need to turn it off.
Yeah.
If you can't stop playing it, just turn it off. It's hard to walk away from. But that's what it's, you know, it's meant to keep you for like hours and hours. And hours while you worry about your crops and you farm things in the mine. In the mines, you farm stuff. And also fishing. There's fishing, too. Like, it's, you know, it's just, like, extra chore things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I played it for a little bit, and that was enough for me. So, I don't know.
All right. So, the next question is from our friend Sarah, also known as Serene Wow on Twitter. And it is, what should I do about all my problematic faves?
Sarah, you should go back and listen to when you asked this question before.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a serious answer for her? Because it was a while ago now.
It was a while ago. Acknowledge that they're problematic and why they're problematic. Don't try to defend them if someone points out that they're problematic. Don't pay for their work if you are morally okay with that. I think you can separate the art from the artist if someone is problematic, but they make really catchy tunes or something. So, you know, just accept what it is that they're doing and how, you know, maybe they're personally a problem, but you can still enjoy the creative stuff they put out.
Yeah, that. The next one that we have Oh, okay. This is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
This one is from a Latino lawyer on Twitter. And he asks, has a game ever overtly changed the way you live your life? Example, how you dress, or how you speak, how you dress, interact, or allocate resources, and why?
That's a hard question. I was trying to think of something.
That's a big question.
A couple things I thought of that aren't like 100% answers to this, but sort of. I was thinking about the game Under a Killing Moon, which is like a future detective story. I first played that when I was only like 11 years old or something, and that really got me into like detective stories and noir, like The Big Sleep, The Maltese Falcon, stuff like that. It sort of sparked that interest because a video game was the first time I was really introduced to that. And then another one is Planescape Torment, which in that game, I mean, it's sort of D&D based, and there's a big focus on alignments, like chaotic neutral or lawful good, and there's all these factions in that game that all sort of take some kind of belief, but then take it to a ridiculous, like to ridiculous lengths. Like there are anarchists whose beliefs are very, I don't know, kind of hypocritical, and then there are like the godsmen who are very about like wanting to transcend, and then there is like this party that's all about order and using the law but not using any sort of anything to temper it, just like this is the law, this is what you have to do no matter what. And so just sort of all of these factions and beliefs that are just almost fanatical, and realizing how that's not really a good way to do things. So I don't know. I think about those factions and what they say and what they believe, and how things that start off as good beliefs can turn into something that is bad just because of the length they're taken to.
Yeah. I have a different sort of answer. The first game where I started wearing their merchandise, I'm pretty sure it was Mass Effect. The sweater. and then World of Warcraft definitely changed how I scheduled my life for a long time. because raiding was taking up 3 nights a week. And then all of the other activities that go along with getting ready to be able to do that kind of took up the rest of the days. There was, I don't know, a big period of my life that was, you know, scheduled around being able to do raids in World of Warcraft. So that one for sure.
And I'm sure Warcraft also has influenced the way we both speak. I'm positive there's jargon that we would not use if we did not play Warcraft for so long.
That's definitely true. I mean, one of the things that I've gotten from playing like online games, and I guess this kind of comes from having Twitter around too, is, you know, calling people the names they would like to be called, and then like also using the proper pronouns for people too. That's something that Twitter in particular has made me aware of, and more, and like that kind of that comes from having Warcraft around for a while, because I probably wouldn't have been on Twitter if it weren't for our old guild leader, Kern, saying, you know, a bunch of guildies on Twitter and you should get on there too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably for me, I guess Warcraft kind of like was the catalyst for a lot of, you know, using different language, and then also scheduling my life around it, which thankfully doesn't happen anymore. I've got lots of time for other stuff. But yeah, I think that's probably the biggest one for me.
That's a good one. I can't believe I didn't think of that. If it wasn't for Warcraft,
it's been out of your life for so long.
That's I know. Exactly. Like, if it wasn't for Warcraft, I wouldn't have started my blog, and then I wouldn't have gone on Twitter, and then I wouldn't be making videos about
gaming. We wouldn't have this podcast. Now
we probably wouldn't have this podcast. We wouldn't know each other.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you know, as much as I like to, like, bag on World of Warcraft now, it's a big part of my life, so it's like, you know, it's okay, I guess.
All right, so the next question comes from Duke0619, also known as Retro Nonsense, and it's, would you like FMV games to make a comeback, or are they better left alone as a quirky part of gaming history? Have you played many FMV games?
It's been a long time. I don't even remember, like, what they were called anymore. Right. They're, like, those are the games that have, like, the movies in them, right?
Yeah, they've got, like, real actors and things.
What's that puzzle game, you know, where your hand is a skeleton and you, like, click on things and you do puzzles? 11th Guest, is that... Does that sound right? 11th Guest.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah.
I'm pretty sure...
So, wait, 7th...
7th Guest and 11th Hour. 7th Guest and 11th Hour, yeah. There we go. That took a while.
Yeah.
See, that's how long it's been. But I'm pretty sure those had, like, FMV sections with, like, ghosts and stuff and, like, visions of... I mean, yeah, so those are probably the last ones that I've played. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool as, like, VR... you know, adding in some VR, like, and being able to play and seeing, like, people. But I guess, like, that's the point of VR. I don't... I don't know.
Yeah, I like FMV games. I've played a lot of them, and I'd like if they come back. And there actually have been a few that have been released. Her Story came out a couple years ago, and that was a really good indie game where you were sort of solving a mystery, and it was all video clips of this one woman. There was also one out called Contradiction, which I haven't played yet, but Pushing Up Roses just did a review of it recently, and that's another, like, detective one with FMV. There's another one I played recently called The Bunker, which didn't work as well as a game for me, but it had, like, really good acting and story. And then I mentioned Under a Killing Moon and the Tex Murphy games. They put out a new game. It's a few years ago now, but I feel like it's being dabbled in right now, and I'd definitely like to see it more. It looks so much better now. I mean, even going back to the ones in the sort of mid-90s and just how, like, pixelated and everything people look, which is now they're, like, crystal clear. It really is, like, watching a movie inside the game. So I'd love to see more FMV games.
So the next question we actually got through email, which is cool because I don't think we've had an email question, comes from Joe, and his question, he's asking for recommendations for podcasts like Limetown and the Black Tapes. We listen to some of Pam's recommendations and like them, and is wondering if you've got any more suggestions, and because I don't, because I haven't listened to any like that. So this is all you.
The one that I talked about earlier, Alice Isn't Dead, I would recommend that one. Also, Welcome to Night Vale. I haven't listened to a ton of that one, but it's the same sort of thing, sort of like a radio drama, and it's a little bit, like, bizarre and supernatural. People who make the Black Tapes make another one called Tanis, and I haven't listened to that one yet, but it is on my list of things to listen to. And then if you like, if you don't mind nonfiction, then Serial is a really good nonfiction podcast. All right, the last question comes from AC Decepticon, who left this on the Cartridge Club forums, and it is, since I just downloaded my first ever digital copy of a game, which was Stardew Valley on PS4, could you tell listeners what your top five indie games are? It's hard to pick five, because there are so many good indie games. I just sort of went through my list on Groovy and like looked at all my five stars. So Shovel Knight is one, which was a Cartridge Club game of the month not too long ago. That was a really great game. The Swapper is another one, which is like a puzzle game. It's set in space and you have this machine that can basically clone yourself into other areas. So like you can use up to four copies of yourself in order to solve puzzles. Bastion is a great game. It is a sort of action adventure game. It's sort of post-apocalyptic and it has the best soundtrack ever. Also the Blackwell series, which is a point-and-click adventure series about a woman who can see and talk to ghosts. And then the last one is The Cat Lady, about a woman who, it's hard to describe this one. It's really good. It's like, it's another adventure game about a woman who is sort of called on by some kind of entity to sort of do her bidding. And it's really good. It also has a fantastic soundtrack.
It's got a good, like, spooky vibe too.
Yeah.
So if you like that. It's spooky.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of like what ones I've played. Did Ori and the Blind Forest come from an indie developer?
I think it was developed by an indie developer, but it was published by Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, that was the best platformer game that I've ever played.
Yeah.
And the story in the game, I didn't expect it to have that big of an impact. But like I was like bawling like the first like 30 seconds of the game. I was like in tears, and then like halfway through the game I was like, I can't take this anymore, and I had to like put the controller down and like walk away for a little bit.
Yeah, Ori's great. Yeah. Platforming's good, and it gets really challenging, too,
at parts. Yeah, and it really builds up on, like, the skills that you learn throughout the game. Like, you start, you know, in one area, and you learn how to do, like, this one thing, which is, like, I don't know, jumping on top of enemies or something. That's probably not right, but, you know, example. And then, like, getting to, like, the middle of the game, now you know how to do that, plus, like, shoot things while you're like in the air, and then you know how to like slingshot to like light fixtures, and then like slingshot off of those and like go in different directions and crawl up like, you know, walls and stuff. So it built on like all of the skills that you learned throughout the game really well, I thought. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. I don't know if it like counts as a completely indie game, but
you can download it digitally, though.
Yeah. Gosh, I played, like, I don't know if I have, like, favorite ones, but I've only played a few. I played The Witness. Is that is kind of an indie game? Because one dude did it.
Yeah,
that's definitely. I played some of The Witness. I definitely didn't finish it because the puzzles were, like, too frustrating for me.
Yeah.
But it's really pretty, and like at first you feel like a super champion because you're solving all of these puzzles, but it gets frustrating really quickly. So, and then one more that I definitely want to mention is the Stanley Parable. And I guess if you don't know anything about it, don't go read anything about it. Yeah. I'm not going to spoil it.
But it's, like, it's really good. You're able to, like, make a bunch of different choices, and it changes, like, the narration in the game, and, like, kind of how you go through the game. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think I've played a lot of indie games, to be honest.
There's Transistor. You played that, right?
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one. It's been a while since I've played that. I should probably play it again. That's another one that, like, the mechanics for me were kind of difficult to, like, be able to do properly. But the story was so good and the music was so good that I didn't get, like, super, super frustrated doing it. So, I don't know. And I'm sure, like, other people would pick up on, like, the, especially the combat mechanics, better than I did. I think I just, like, set it to easy mode after a while.
Yeah, I think I did that as well. The combat didn't really do a whole lot for me, but
yeah,
but the
yeah.
story and the aesthetics and everything were so good.
Mm-hmm. Such a pretty game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and we should probably also mention Firewatch, since we also talk about that in a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
And that's just, if you don't know already, it's about a man who's sort of trying to escape his problems at home, and he goes to be a fire warden at a national park, and sort of his experiences there.
That's a good one. It's really pretty too. Like, there's one thing about, like, indie games is they really have, I guess the aesthetics. Like, they have the look, you know, everything looks really good. Oh, I guess if you haven't played Gone Home.
Oh, yeah.
That's another really good one, too. Mm-hmm. And that one's got, like, that, like, Gone Home especially, like, creates this really, like, spooky kind of atmosphere as well, because you're, like, exploring a house. Well, it's, like, technically your house, but it's spooky.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not spooky at the same time because it's your house. I don't know. Like, they do a really good job of, like, making you feel, I don't know. I thought at first it was a horror game.
Yeah, so did I. I kept thinking something bad was going to happen.
Yeah.
I feel like Firewatch and Gone Home both kind of do that. They take something which is sort of, I mean, I guess Firewatch is not really mundane, like Gone Home is just exploring through a house, but they make it, like, they put this extra sort of anxiety in there because of the atmosphere, and you think, oh no, something bad's gonna happen.
yeah it's too quiet, there's no way. Yeah, I guess that's all I can think about. I have, like, I don't know, I really need to get off, like, the Overwatch.
The Blizzard games.
Yeah. I need to go play some other things.
Yep. Oh, also, if you have someone to play with Overcooked.
Yeah. That was so good.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, my boyfriend, and I, we played it. And we actually finished it.
Oh, nice.
And it was really good. So, like, the stream that you and I did for the Spawn on Me charity weekend, we weren't that far away from the end.
Oh no.
No. We got to the, like, my boyfriend and I got to the point where you and I had stopped, and I think it only took us another 45 minutes maybe to get to the end. So
yeah, I'd like to finish it. I just not by myself, because that was terrible.
Yeah, the way that they did that looks really difficult. Like, one half of the controller is one of the little cooks, and the other half of the controller is another cook.
Yeah,
like,
it's very confusing.
That looks very difficult.
It's kind of like, because they do that in Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons, because you're controlling two guys, and one of them uses the left stick and one of them uses the right stick, and that takes some getting used to. But just in Overcooked, like, it's so much more frantic. Like, you have to move around so much, so it's my brain couldn't handle that.
I really want to play Overcooked with four people.
Yeah,
like, I want to see what that would be like. Mm-hmm. Even one more person added onto the, like, the two-player thing that I've had experience with, like, I think one more person would add that extra, like, bit of panic.
Yeah. Especially on the levels where there's only, like, a single lane to go through.
Yeah. Like, all three of them are just, like, stuck.
All right. I think that was the end of our questions. So, thank you, everyone who sent us questions. We always greatly appreciate them. We did get a few more that we just don't really have any answers to, so we're not going to talk about those. But thanks
we'll save them.
Yeah.
For later.
Yeah. But thanks for sending them in. And also, we had a big, like, traffic spike last week. So if you're a new listener, welcome. Also, if you came here from somewhere, tell us on Twitter where you came from.
Because we have no idea. Help us out. We don't know where you came from.
Yeah. All right. Where can people contact you, Riley, if they want to get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore. That's it. That's where I am.
And you can find me on Twitter at Josyla underscore or on YouTube where my channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. And if you have any feedback, questions, people, or topic you want to hear on future episodes of the show, you can reach out at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at underscore MediaMavens. And also, if you are a member of the Cartridge Club or interested in being a member of the Cartridge Club, we also have our own forum there where you can ask us questions or leave comments on our episodes or anything like that. And if you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. I did notice we have one new iTunes and one new Stitcher review. Although new is a relative term, but previously unnoticed. Oh. Yes.
Well, thanks.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time. Don't die.
He's dying. No. It'll be more quiet around here. I'm just kidding. It's terrible. To write down where I said that. Anyway. Whoa. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was loud.
Oh my god. Whoa. Okay. Jeez.
Your stomach has very strong feelings about
this. It does.
Jesus.
Okay. Okay.